Salahuddin al-Ayyubi rahimahullah's most important rallying call was that of unity. His era represents a glowing example of the fruits to be reaped when Muslims overcame the constraints of a narrow-minded nationalism and tribalism. Nur ad-Din was a Turk, Salahuddin a Kurd, Yusuf ibn Tashfin a Berber, and the Abbasid Khalif an Arab. But they all formed a united front under the banner of the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah.
He united the Muslims, and so the Arabs and the non-Arabs came together under him. The light skin and the dark skin came together under Salah ad-Din.
Many of the greatest scholars were not Arabs. They were from Central Asia. They were from India. Whenever the deen was in danger, it was never, and it was not always the Arabs, it was everybody who had a concern for this deen. Imaduddin, Nuruddin, Yusuf Tashfin, all these were non-Arabs. Salahuddin were non-Arabs. Al-Quds is where? It's smack bang in the middle of the Middle East, the Arab world. But these people raced to liberate it, because they were an ummah.
When Nuruddin Zangi passed away after Ramadan in 569 Hijri, the Muslim world was plunged into chaos. Salahuddin al-Ayyubi rahimahullah initially did not believe the news, but soon enough the reports were confirmed. More worryingly, when news of his death became known, all kinds of greed and ambition was let loose. Coming from the family of Nuruddin, other emirs, military commanders, and even the crusaders, Salahuddin, at this stage, was the most prominent leader in the Abbasid Empire.
You know how much land he eventually ended up governing? He became the ruler of Egypt, the ruler of Hijaz, the ruler of Syria, and the ruler of Yemen, and also some parts of North Africa. So imagine his power.
Nuruddin's son, Malik al-Shah, inherited the leadership of Damascus. However, he was barely 11 years old and easily manipulated. Salahuddin held a loyalty to the family of Nuruddin. However, his greater concern was the unity of the Ummah. The ominous news from Sham stoked his worries that the long-cultivated union between Egypt and Sham now lay in jeopardy, and the result would be a dampening of the resolve to take back Al-Quds. Salahuddin marched off to Sham and annexed Damascus to his rule. He eventually did the same to Aleppo and Mosul. He wrote to the Abbasid Khalif explaining his motives, and the Khalif responded, recognizing his authority over Egypt and Sham.
Salahuddin rahmatullah alayhi spent longer, understand this, he spent longer fighting Muslims than he did non-Muslims. He fought with Muslims for over 10 years because he understood that if you are divided, you are weak. You are weak nationally, globally, in a community. If you are divided and you are susceptible to invasion, but if you are united, you are strong.
After 12 years of bitter struggle, Salahuddin became the master of Egypt, Syria, Mosul, and other Muslim lands. His lifelong goal of liberating Masjid al-Aqsa now appeared well within reach. He, however, first had to fend off a series of treacherous assassination attempts on his life by the notorious Shia assassin group.
And the internal threat were a group of assassins who were basically an offshoot, or they took birth from the Ismaili Fatimids. And these people were trained assassins. And later on, they end up becoming known as the Hashashiyun, or also some of you may be aware of them as the Assassin's Creed team. These were the people that Sultan Salahuddin Ayyubi dealt with. And there were many, many assassination attempts on his life. And, you know, when you actually play the game itself, or when you read up about it online, the people who put this particular game together, in their mind was to recapture that city, those people, those assassination attempts, and these assassins and their works. And these were the people that Sultan Salahuddin Ayyubi was dealing with.
Salahuddin also became gravely ill at this point, and his condition caused many to fear that he was on his deathbed. He took a vow to Allah that if he was cured, he'd direct all his attention to the liberation of Al-Quds. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala soon granted him a full recovery. Fractures and internal succession battles were becoming the norm amongst the crusaders in Jerusalem. This state of affairs forced many to enter into alliances with Salahuddin. Salahuddin leveraged these alliances to march unopposed from Damascus closer to Palestine. He was joined by a messing of Muslim forces from Egypt, Damascus, Aleppo, and elsewhere. Sensing danger, the crusaders buried the hatchet amongst themselves and mobilized. No man was exempted from conscription. They gathered on a grand scale and raised the true cross, which they erroneously believed was a remnant of the cross Isa alayhi salam was killed upon. Allah forbid. Salahuddin consulted with his commanders on what to do next. Many opined that the Muslims should not embark on a full-scale confrontation. Salahuddin, however, differed and believed conditions were ripe for a decisive encounter. Salahuddin lured the crusaders out from a vantage point towards Tiberias, forcing them to march through rugged terrain to a plain where they would have no water. The crusaders approached the battlefield in low morale, confounded by thirst and running into several ambushes Salahuddin had laid for them. The armies were to meet atop Mount Tiberias that overlooks the plain of Hittin, which is an area like a hill that rises more than 300 meters above sea level. It has two peaks known as the Horns of Hittin. The Muslims camped in an area of flat land with ample grazing space and water. The crusaders were left on rugged and waterless ground in very hot weather. Fighting began on Friday the 24th of Rabiul Thani 583 Hijri, corresponding to the English year 1187. Salahuddin led a force of 12,000 against 63,000 crusaders. Fighting was fierce, but no side managed to overcome the other. The next day, when fighting resumed, Salahuddin encircled the entire crusader army, leaving them with no escape route. Raymond, a crusader king from Tripoli, saw that the fight was fruitless and departed from the battlefield, dealing a mortal blow to the morale of the crusaders. At the same time, as the wind began to blow in the direction of the enemy, Salahuddin ordered the dry grass and bushes to be set alight so that smoke began choking the crusaders and the flames scalding their faces. The thirst, the summer heat, the heat of the fire, the smoke and the heat of battle all encircled the crusaders in their heavy iron armor, compelling them to retreat.
And there were two different cries from two different camps, because all night the arrows carried on coming. So from the Muslim camp, there were the cries of Takbir, Allahu Akbar. And from the Christian camp, there were the cries of the dying and the wounded.
Salahuddin then struck them a heavy psychological blow when he had the true cross captured. The crusaders were now almost certain of defeat. Just 150 die-hard knights held out defending the tent of the crusader king. Muslims declared victory, but Salahuddin was not satisfied until the tent fell and crusader leaders were taken captive. When this happened, he immediately began to thank Allah, weeping with joy.
What did Salahuddin do? What did he do? Did he jump up and down? He descended from his mount and he went into sajda, because he understood that victory and defeat is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
It's victory from Allah. This man put between his eyes, إِن تَنْصُرُ اللَّهَ يَنْصُرْكُمْ وَيُثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَكُمْ. If you give victory to Allah, Allah will give victory to you and give you the right stance. وَمَا النَّصْرُ إِلَّا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ. Victory is only from Allah. He put that between his eyes and he advanced and advanced. Allah gave him victory.
Almost all key crusader leaders were killed or captured. Salahuddin treated the prisoners well, but did not spare the extremist Templars and Hospitallers, as well as Reynald de Chatillon, who were avowed enemies of Islam.
They were so demoralized that historians mention that one Muslim would have a rope with 30 crusaders on that one rope, and he would be pulling them, and none of them had the will to fight. And there was a faqih who was amongst this army, and he sold one of the captives for a pair of sandals. And somebody asked him, what did you do that for? He said, because I wanted history to remember how many the crusaders were and how cheap they were.
He smashes the Frankish army. He captures the King of Jerusalem. He seizes the true cross. And this is the great military victory that will open the way to recapturing Jerusalem itself.
Imam Dhahabi rahmatullah alayhi says something profound here. He says this was the greatest victory for the Muslims since in Sham, since Khalid bin Walid defeated the Romans at the Battle of Yarmouk. That is a profound statement.
The fruits of decades of spiritual and material preparation were being harvested. Hattin had changed the balance of power in the region and spelt the beginning of the end of the Crusader presence in the Middle East. Muslims in Damascus were throughout the battle prostrating to Allah and praying for success of the Sultan, erupted with joy and moving words when they learnt of this victory. Through this decisive rout of the Crusaders, the road to Al-Aqsa now lay wide open. Hattin had in effect endowed Salahuddin Al-Ayyubi with the keys to Al-Quds.